Hey everyone, so before we get started with this episode, I just want to let you all know that as you're listening to this episode, you are welcome to add us on Instagram at medical.school.podcast. Again, that's medical.school.podcast. And we're also going to start doing a Q&A and integrate that into each episode. So if you have a question that you want to ask either one of our guests or myself, feel free to add us on Instagram and then send it your question as a direct message. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and thank you for listening. Hey everyone, you're listening to the Medical School Podcast, a show that inspires medical students, pre-meds, and even residents to maximize their medical education. My name is Danny Sullivan, and I'm sitting down with doctors and future doctors who share their story and advice. All right, welcome back everyone to the Medical School Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Sullivan, and today this is part two of a three-part series where my guest is Dr. Mike Farrell. Dr. Farrell, thanks again for being on the podcast.
Thanks again for having me.
I know we had you do this in part one, but again, for those who didn't listen to part one, can you introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers?
Sure. So my name is Michael Farrell. I am currently a physical medicine and rehabilitation resident at National Rehabilitation Hospital in Washington, D.C. Previous to going to medical school, I was a chiropractor in Buffalo, New York. And made the decision to return to medical school, attended Ross University, and now I'm here in Washington, D.C.
So in case you didn't listen to part one we talked about Dr. Farrell's journey from chiropractic school to medical school and what that was like. We talked a little bit about kind of his experience with the chiropractic profession. And in this part two, we're going to talk about physical medicine and rehabilitation, which is a specialty that a lot of people don't know about. And it's what Dr. Farrell is doing his residency in. And it's also one of the main specialties that I've been interested in because I did a lot of my job shadowing in pre-med in PM&R. So and then in part three, we're going to talk about a lot of things. Let me just get it up here. So in part three, we're going to talk about exercise and how it relates to having a good lifestyle while you're practicing medicine. And then we're going to talk about low back pain and some of the skills you need to treat low back pain and some of the knowledge you need. And then also we're going to talk about, this is all in part three, we're going to talk about some opioid crisis issues within the specialty of PM&R and how that is affecting the specialty and people practicing there. And then we're also going to talk about some how to handle arguments as a physician, specifically the anti-vaccine argument that a lot of physicians face and talking to patients about that and dealing with it on social media. So that was a real mouthful, but are you good if we just jump right in, Dr. Farrell?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So like I said, in this part two, we're going to talk about physical medicine and rehabilitation, which is a very long name for a specialty. And every time, you know, every time I tell someone that I'm, you know, going to medical school, inevitably the next question is, well, what kind of doctor do you need to be? And then I have to say, well, I want to go into physical medicine and rehabilitation. And I have to say that huge name, right? And then no one knows what it is. So then I have to explain it. But like, this is kind of, it's kind of a unique specialty, and I've had it explained to me as it's sort of like a non-operative orthopedic surgeon. And maybe you disagree with that. Maybe you agree with that. That might be a terrible description. But like, let me just ask you this. What type of, maybe this is the best way to explain what the specialty is. What type of diseases do PM&R doctors care for and treat?
Sure. I think that your description as a non-operative orthopedic surgeon is actually good. I actually use a description when I'm talking to medical students. I tell them that PM&R kind of incorporates all of the best mechanical aspects of thinking like an orthopedic surgeon, looking at mm-hmm. the body as a mechanical apparatus and thinking about how muscles interact with bones to kind of move the body. But it also incorporates kind of the continuity of care and the nurturing tendencies of a family medicine physician. So I said that if family medicine and orthopedic surgery had a baby, that it would be physical medicine and rehabilitation. And, you know, if you think about it in those terms, it should lend itself to then what kind of conditions that PM&R can treat. And really, it's anything that causes the body to decrease its functional ability from what it was before. So you think about how many people come into the hospital and they have any condition at all, CHF, they have emphysema, they have diabetes and diabetic vasculopathy. All of those things are going to impact their ability to function. And whether it's mm-hmm. that the patient with CHF can't walk up and down the stairs, or whether it's that the patient with diabetic vasculopathy has a wound on their foot that limits their ability to walk, and then they need to have an amputation and then relearn how to walk again. All mm-hmm. of those things are going to decrease, you know, your ability to live your daily life and, you know, get from point A to point B, do a job, take care of your family, whatever it is, the things that you want to do. And that's kind of where physiatry fits into the medical model, is that when someone has a disease, that disease can impact their ability to do things. And when their abilities are limited, we need to do something to try to get them back to the highest level of function possible. And usually that's a combination of physical therapy, occupational therapy, different medications possibly if they need that, controlling all of their medical comorbidities and their medical problems. And mm-hmm. physical medicine and rehab docs kind of quarterback and manage that whole effort to take someone from where they are functionally after sustaining a medical injury or after having a medical condition limit them, and then bringing them back to the maximum level of ability that they possibly can have.
So when I was shadowing, the doctor kind of explained it to me as the PM&R doctors are sort of the doctors of last resort. Right. When all the other doctors are just kind of like, you know, there's nothing else we can do. Like, for example, if you have low back pain, maybe you go to your family, family medicine doctor, who, I don't know, maybe eventually it's so bad that you need surgery. So you get a few surgeries. And then even after surgery, I mean, you're still in excruciating pain and no one knows really what to do for you. And so at that point you go to a PM&R doctor. Is that sort of what it looks like? Is that kind of accurate that they're in some ways doctors of last resort, or is that not really true?
I think that that's changing a lot.
Uh-huh.
Some of that might be because what you alluded to in the first little section here, where you said, you know, I not a lot of people know what physical medicine and rehab docs do or what physiatrists do.
Yeah.
And so as a result, it does sometimes take a longer for a patient to get to a physiatrist. But I think that that's changed a lot in the last 5 years, and I think it's going to continue to change in the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. A lot of the work that the AAPMNR is doing, and the AAP, which are like the professional organizations for physiatrists, they're really doing a good job of educating other providers of what physiatrists do. And I think that other providers are starting to see that instead of waiting until, you know, we've already gone through the surgeries and we've tried the medications and we've tried some of these other things, instead of it being a last resort, instead we're being looked at as a resource in the initial onset and management of some of these injuries. And I think that that's only going to increase in the future as mm-hmm. more doctors get an understanding of what it is that we do and what the area of expertise is. And I believe that that's going to, you know, benefit a lot of patients to get in to see a physiatrist earlier on in their stages of disease as opposed to later on, as you said, as like a last ditch effort. And so I think that that's changing a lot. I think that historically that might've been accurate to say, but I think that that's very different now.
So right now you're in a physiatry residency. How long is that residency, and how competitive is it to match into?
It's a total of 4 years. The first year being a general internship, which can be made up of an internship in surgical medicine, an internship in internal medicine, or a transitional year, and then 3 years of physical medicine and rehab training. In terms of the competitiveness, I think that, you know, I've heard people historically joke and say that that's all you need, you know, to get into PM&R was a pulse. and, you know, it was known as medicine's best kept secret because of that. You know, it was a great profession. It gave you a lot of work-life balance, and you know, financially it was well compensated, and so it flew under the radar a little bit, and it was historically an easier profession to match into for residency. That's not the case in terms of what we're seeing from the NRMP match data. It continues to get more and more competitive every year. The number of applicants is almost doubling. I mean, it has doubled in the past couple of years, and it is definitely kind of climbing that that ladder. And that kind of goes along with what we were saying before. I think that as more medical schools expose medical students to PM&R, and as the, you know, national organizations do a better job of explaining to other doctors what PM&R does, the visibility of the specialty also increases. And as a result, more and more medical students are seeing exactly what physiatrists do, and that's attracting them to the specialty because they're seeing the kind of impact that physiatrists make on their patients' lives. And they're seeing the things that they're able to achieve. And it's very attractive. And so I think that it's definitely getting more competitive each and every year. I haven't looked at the most recent match data, but I know that before applying, when I was looking at it, I was seeing the trend. And I was talking to one of the medical students at Georgetown, and who was also like kind of looking at the trends as they were going into the match. And they said, what is it about PM&R that's making it become so competitive? And you know, that I think that all of those things kind of to come into play, the types of patients that we get to work with and the rewarding nature of the work that we do, coupled with the fact that PM&R doctors tend to have a very good work-life balance, and a very good quality of life then afterwards, which is really important.
The doctor that you mentioned, that they have a generally like a good lifestyle, the doctor that I shadowed seemed like he had it made. I mean, kind of. He, you know, he worked long hours during the day. I think he came in around 7 and left around, you know, 6 or 7 in the evening. But like on Fridays, like they'd leave at, I don't know, 12 o'clock on Fridays, right? So they could have a longer weekend. And I don't think he was ever on call. Is that pretty normal for PM&R docs just to be never on call?
Depending on the area of medicine that you work in, if you work in a more outpatient musculoskeletal clinic, you know, more orthopedic slash sports medicine environment, then yeah, I mean, whenever the whatever hours the clinic has is pretty much your hours, which is usually a Monday through Friday schedule. Now, if you decide that you want to work in spinal cord injury, in a large facility that has a lot of trauma, then your hours, you know, might be more than that, and you might be on call more than that. But that kind of that's one of the things that is also really great about the profession, is that there is so much variability that you can right. kind of customize it to what you would like to do. That's one of the things that I think people find most appealing, is that there is so much diversity that, you know, whether mm-hmm. you decide to work in a traumatic brain injury floor in a hospital, or whether you decide to do more sports medicine, on-field coverage, those types of things, the options are there for you to be able to do that. And you right. can always, you know, try to tailor make during residency what kind of lifestyle you would want. And that's why, you know, outside rotations are really good for that, because you get to see kind of the how attendings practice within the profession and what they do and what their day-to-day is like.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about, just kind of wrapping up here this part two, let's just talk a little bit about the opioid epidemic and how that relates to the specialty of PM&R, because I imagine that a lot of the patients you see, you're dealing with opioids, you're dealing with pain management. So are there, because of this epidemic, are there any treatments that physiatrists are going to lean towards because of the sort of crackdown on opioid use? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I hope so. One of the things that I think that the opioid epidemic has done is really it's brought the issue of musculoskeletal health and chronic pain mm-hmm. to the forefront, whereas historically it's been extremely underfunded in terms of research. And it's right. been one of those things that has kind of been put on the back burner a little bit because there's so many other things that we can be focusing on. You know, we've done great things in terms of, you know, coronary artery disease and the treatment of myocardial infarctions and, you know, with right. with different catheterizations, and all of that research, because the mortality is so high with coronary artery disease, you can see why people would allocate more money towards it or focus more on it yeah. as opposed to chronic pain. But you know, because we've disregarded it a little bit, it's kind of snuck up on us a little bit, and now we are looking at opiate use and we're seeing, you know, the problems that is causing, and now it's finally kind of coming into the light, and we're seeing more people focusing on that, and more policymakers really try to take positions to try to help improve that. And I think that you know, that puts PM&R docs in a good position to kind of be leaders in that effort, because we are dealing with musculoskeletal conditions. And as the profession, you know, kind of grows in its influence and more of the population is seeing them, I think they can have a big impact on decreasing the amount of opiates mm-hmm. that are being prescribed for some of these conditions. Because when you look at the research, opiate use for musculoskeletal conditions like back pain, there's not a ton of evidence that they're very effective. And right. if we know that that's the truth, then, and we become, you know, more of the gatekeepers to these types of patients, then, you know, we won't even start them on those medications, and we'll almost have a primary preventative strategy of decreasing mm-hmm. The epidemic. So, go ahead.
Sorry, just real quick. What fellowships or subspecialties are there available to people going into physiatry or PM&R?
So there are fellowships in all of the kind of core areas of PM&R. So traumatic mm-hmm. brain injury, spinal cord injury, stroke rehabilitation. There are sports medicine fellowships that are available. There are pain medicine okay. fellowships that are available. There are cancer rehabilitation fellowships that are available. There are some pediatric fellowships that kind of couple with pediatric programs, which, you know, is kind of its own thing. And then there are also non-ACGME accredited fellowships that kind of help to incorporate they kind of incorporate a couple different things. So like there are sport and spine non-ACGME accredited fellowships that take mm-hmm. both the spine interventional procedural type practice and also sports coverage and you know, caring for athletes in almost a primary care setting. Gotcha. But so there's a lot of variability, like I said, and a lot of diversity when it comes to training that you can do afterwards.
Well, I think that's gonna, we're gonna wrap up this part two.
Sure.
And then in part three, we're gonna talk about, like I said, this kind of dealing with this argument of anti-vaccines when you're a doctor. We already talked about a lot about kind of opioid misuse and with the treatment of back pain, but we're gonna dive deep into some other things. But I just want to thank you again for being on this episode of the podcast.
No problem.